It's time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello and welcome to episode 44 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. Thank you so much for being here today. I hope that you are enjoying some of the awesome summer activities that we only get to participate in this time of year, like rodeos. I mean, it's pretty neat that we're right in the heart of like the busiest rodeo time of the year. Cowboy Christmas is coming up right around the corner. So I hope you're able to take some of that in, as well as spending some time with your horses and just really enjoying the summer weather. We have to make the most of it here in Montana because it seems like winter lasts for like 8 months and summer is a very short 3 months. And in case you missed the last episode, I'm looking for bumpers for my show. So if you love the Earn Your Spurs podcast and you want to record a bumper for me, just go to earnyourspurs.com and click on contact. You can then click on the link to leave me a voicemail. You can just say something like your name and what you do and that you're listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. So get those in to me if you would, and let's have some fun with that. Now on to today's guest. He was born and raised in New York City. He has a background in psychology and spent most of his career working in the movie and TV business. Tim Hayes never even rode his first horse until he was 48 years old, but he had the amazing fortune to have the opportunity to spend some time on a famous cattle ranch in Bruno, Idaho for several years, just learning all about riding, roping, branding, and what it is to work on a ranch. From there, he went on to study horsemanship with some of the greats like the Dorrances and Ray Hunt. And today, Tim gives his own clinics all over the country. Allow me to introduce you to Tim Hayes. Tim, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to chat with you. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, Alyssa, I am thrilled and so happy you invited me to join you, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, I think that the work that you've been doing is really fascinating. And before we kind of get into what your book is about, I would love to hear your story and sort of how you got into horses in the first place and what that journey looked like for you.
Well, I have to say, I've told this story many times to people who just don't understand how it happened for me. Sometimes I wonder how it happened. I was born and raised in Greenwich Village, New York. And I wanted to be a psychiatrist, but I couldn't get into medical school. I went to the University of Vermont. And my father worked in advertising and helped me get a job in the television commercial movie business. And I loved it. And I worked in that business for over 30 years, making commercials and movies and writing and producing and directing. And just by chance, I happened to be on vacation in the 90s, when I was 48, I had never ridden a horse.
Wow.
And I was in Idaho where I knew someone, and they introduced me to a family that had a 150,000 acre cattle ranch. Mm. And they had never met anyone from New York City, so they thought I was special. And I had never met cowboys, and I thought they were special. And we kind of hit it off, and they said, why don't you come and stay with us as much as you can? And we'll teach you how to be a cowboy.
Wow, what an offer.
And it came at a time in my life where I had the resources and I had a lot of free time. And I started hanging out on this cattle ranch. And I just loved it. They taught me how to ride. They taught me how to rope. They taught me how to brand. They taught me how to fix fences. And after about 4 years, the thing that I loved the most was the horses. Mm. And I decided that I really wanted to learn about horses and understand them and maybe be a horse trainer. And at that time, The only thing that I thought I could do was to learn what we call the traditional horse training way, where you break horses, and it had a lot of appeal to my macho streak, and I thought I'd be very cool. However, at the same time, I read an article about natural horsemanship, and it was about a fellow named Tom Dorrance, mm-hmm. who we like to consider the grandfather of natural horsemanship. And I picked up the phone and I called him. And I ended up studying with Tom. And that led me to studying with a lot of Tom's disciples, like Ray Hunt and Buck Brannaman and Pat Pirelli. And I was so fortunate because all my horse training came from these master horsemen. And I started right from the beginning learning the kinder, softer, more gentle way of using communication as opposed to force.
That is amazing. I can guarantee you there are people listening right now who are just like drooling over the fact that you had such good fortune to learn from those legends.
I'll tell you, Alyssa, and even this one show that we're doing today, you know, there's not enough time to tell you all the serendipitous or spiritual occurrences that happened on this journey. But when I start to go through them, they're just unbelievable. I mean, just one example is I thought I had gotten as far as I could because there's no horses in Greenwich Village. Mm-hmm. And just as I thought, well, this is about the end of my journey, they built this multi-million dollar equestrian center right in the middle of Manhattan. And I got a job teaching natural horsemanship three nights a week.
Wow.
I used to take people on horses and do groundwork looking up at the Empire State Building.
That's amazing.
I then started working as a teacher and a trail guide at a ranch out in Long Island, and I became so busy and people started to call me for help that I ended up doing it full time. So in 2003, I retired from the film business. I set up a company using my last name and called it Hayes's for Horses. And I started teaching natural horsemanship all over the world, doing clinics and classes and demonstrations. And the thing about it is I never did this with the idea of changing careers or making money. I followed it because I just loved doing it. Mm-hmm. And one thing just led to another. It was just an unbelievable journey.
Well, I have to ask you, I guess there's more people in my area in Montana that do this kind of thing than on the East Coast. And I'm just curious what the horse culture is there compared to like when you were in Idaho.
Well, to make a generalization, the majority of the horse culture around the Northeast are people who ride English. There are people who follow disciplines like jumping, hunter jumpers, dressage, eventing. There's polo. There's no cattle ranches in the East Coast. There's a fair amount of people who like to ride Western, but we don't have roping events. We don't have cattle. And you don't find, like you do out West, that horses are used on the job. Mm. You know, one of the things that was so helpful to me and I love so much about being in the West were that horses were a part of daily life for a lot of people.
Right.
They didn't look at them as entertainment or something to do. It was, you know, what they did to work on their ranches. And there was a whole different attitude in terms of partnership with a horse. You know, one of the things I teach is that the most important thing for everyone, in my opinion, when it comes to a horse is the relationship. Mm. You have to have a really good relationship or a partnership, and you really want your horse to look at you as the senior partner or the leader before you get on their back. And this is true whether you're a cowboy or someone who does dressage, but there's more people because of the mutual work ethic on cattle ranches where they really have to work as a team that are able to create that, because back east, or when you're doing events like jumping or dressage, you look more at the event rather than your partner.
How do you know when you have that partnership with your horse that you're talking about?
It's very much like people, Alyssa. I like to say there's three things that are most meaningful for horses. And until you understand horses the way you understand people, and until you can provide these three things for your horse, you're never going to get your ultimate positive relationship. The first thing is safety. Horses as prey animals are focused on survival. That's the most important thing in their life, because they're always afraid that the predator is going to eat them. Mm. So you have to help your horse become confident that you're going to look after him, and that you're never going to ask him to do something that's going to have him feel threatened or afraid. Then your horse wants to be comfortable. He'd rather walk than trot. He'd rather trot than canter. He'd rather stand still than walk. Whatever it is, he just wants to take it easy. That's why you see them standing around just facing the sun or facing the wind for hours, because it's just comfortable not to do anything. And then the third thing for a horse is leadership. Everything's based on survival, and a horse feels safer if he has a leader than if he has to be his own leader. It's almost like being a good parent. You know, you ask a young child, would you rather live by yourself if you're 10 years older? Would you like to have mom and dad? They'll all say, no, no, I need mom and dad. And a horse is the same way. If he knows that you are looking after him, that you have wisdom and experience that can help him survive, he's very happy to let you be the leader. He does that in the herd with the alpha horse. So if you understand safety, comfort, and leadership are what's important to a horse, and you can provide that over time in your relationship, you will see a monumental change in how he relates to you. All of a sudden, you have a best friend who just wants to be with you and is happy to do whatever you ask.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty neat when you do have that sort of bond with your horse. And I know I have that with one of mine. So at what point did you sort of start to realize that horses have that the power to heal?
It started when I was teaching natural horsemanship and working with some people who'd never, you know, had much horse experience. The first thing I noticed was people seemed to be drawn to horses that were very much like them in their personalities. I remember a young woman picked a horse that I never would have picked to work with. The horse was kind of rambunctious and liked to be a little bit, you know, bucky and have fun and run around. And she loved that. And I discovered that was a lot like she was. She liked taking risks. She liked danger. She liked living on the edge. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Mm. And as time went on, I could see that happen with many people. People were drawn to horses that, when you discovered the horse's personality, had a lot of similarities to your own. The next thing that happened was back in the 90s, I saw someone do a workshop with a woman, and they just asked the woman to pick up the horse's feet as an exercise, and the woman couldn't do it because the horse didn't want to pick up its feet. And she got very upset. And the leader in the workshop said, "Why are you so upset?" And she said, "Because I feel very embarrassed. I hate that I can't do this." And the leader said, "Well, have you ever done it before?" And she said, "No." And he said, "Well, why didn't you ask for help?" And she said, "Oh, I never ask for help. It's too embarrassing." And he said, "Now, is that true in the rest of your life?" She said, "Sure." And all of a sudden, she had an epiphany. And she started to realize that by never asking for help, she had limited herself both in her work and in her social life. And at the end of the little session, he said, maybe that's something when you get back home you'd like to look at, you know, have a therapist or a counselor and examine, because you're really limiting a lot of wonderful things. And the time that that took for her to have that epiphany was 45 seconds. And I know, just because I have a lot of background in therapy, that that kind of a self-realization can take months sometimes. And I thought, wow, horses have an ability to really mirror human beings. You know, when you go out into a corral with a horse, the horse reads your body language. You know that old expression, Alyssa, where they say, you know, if you're afraid, your horse can feel it if you're sitting on its back? Well, that's like the most obvious. If you're afraid, your horse can look at you from 20 feet away and see it in your body language. And much, much more. And so for a horse to feel safe and comfortable enough to come up to you and allow you to pet it, you have to be approachable, you have to be confident, you have to be vulnerable, and the horse is going to mirror back to you what you're giving off. So in effect, if you want to learn about yourself, about the truth about yourself, about what your strengths and weaknesses are, there's no better way than to have an interaction with a horse, because you'll get it right back from the horse immediately.
How does somebody who doesn't have the same eye that you do, you've been kind of developing this for a long time, how would somebody know when that mirroring is happening? Like, what things do you look for?
Well, when I started, I got on my first horse in Idaho. I was 48 years old. And I always used to say, if I can do this coming from Greenwich Village, anybody can do this. The thing is that I had a passion. I loved it. I wanted it. I could never get enough. I still can't get enough. I just find it fascinating and wonderful. Having interspecies relationship, it's so unique. And anyone who knows horses like yourself and some of your listeners, even if they can't explain why, knows there's something special going on with their horse and them. It's so true. And the way you learn is by finding someone who has done it before and can guide you. That's how I learned. And I remember when I started, I was doing a clinic with Tom Dorns, and we were working with a horse, and the horse was walking around the corral. And Tom said, did you see that? You see what he just did? And I said, see what? I didn't see anything. Well, today I know what Tom saw because I see the same thing, but I had no idea what he saw. So it takes years and many horses and a lot of experience to start to observe horses, because everything a horse does means something. We all know the simple thing. If a horse pins its ears, it's kind of like a warning, like he's not happy. But there are thousands of little things horses do that you're not aware of that mean things. And so the best way to do it is to find a teacher, find someone that does what I do, and start to work. And then you'll learn the language of the horse, and then you'll start to be able to really listen to what your horse is telling you.
Yeah, I think it's so important, like you said, to have a good coach that can teach you. I mean, for one thing, it's important to be safe when you're learning how to ride. But another, you know, you have to have someone that can teach you those little nuances, like you said. And I know my dad happens to be a horse trainer. He gives a lot of lessons. And that's one of the biggest things for people that are new, either to riding or just to working with him. He'll say something and they have no idea what he's talking about. But after a while, they figure it out. It just takes time and some good coaching to get there. So tell me, how did you come to, you know, deciding to write this book, Riding Home? What was it that inspired you to do that?
Well, I actually started to write a book that had more to do with the story we've been talking about, because people were saying, you have a very unusual story coming from the film business and ending up working with horses. You should write a book about that. And so I started this well over 10 years ago. And halfway through, because of the work that I was doing, I started to see all the equine therapy programs that started to become popular. Some of the first ones I remember were ones that were helping kids with autism. And then more recently, about 4 or 5 years ago, I started to observe some of the programs with veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder. And not only did I find them fascinating and just fabulous and incredibly effective, but I said to myself, what is it about a horse that is able to heal emotional wounds of diverse groups, like a child with autism, a soldier with post-traumatic stress disorder, a teenager with drug addiction, or all these other varied groups? The common denominator of the horse, what is it about the horse that lends itself to this? And so I started writing this book to discover why, then to try to explain in a kind of experiential and a scientific way why, and then to tell some of the stories, because as you probably know, the healing that horses are able to provide for some of these people and groups is so effective, and so effective where other ways are really not, you know? I mean, the classic example are the thousands of men and women who have come back from our wars who have post-traumatic stress disorder and for years have tried to heal with traditional talk therapy or have taken massive amounts of prescription medication, only to find out they're worse now than they were when they came home. And then all of a sudden, if they learn that, oh my goodness, there's this equine therapy out there, it's remarkable the breakthroughs they have and how healing it is.
Yeah, it is amazing. I've been really interested in the same thing. Like you said, the therapy side of things. And I think it's truly fascinating as well. Do you have maybe some stories that you could share with us that that you maybe came across when you were researching your book?
Yeah, the stories are heartbreaking, heartwarming. Sometimes they bring you to tears. They're so inspiring. And I think the takeaway is it really makes anyone who experiences it or hears about it or sees it or reads about it just marvel at this ability that horses have that, you know, years ago, nobody had any idea about this. You know, in my book, I say, I mean, horses have helped humans for thousands of years. You know, if you go back, the first thing that horses provided was food. They were food for humans. And then the next thing they provided was they were beasts of burdens. They carried things for us. And then when people discovered we could ride them, they became fabulous instruments of war, with hundreds of thousands of men fighting wars on horseback. And when, you know, the motor engine came to be and there were no more cavalries, they just became basically, you know, without just being cowboy ranch horses, a recreation. But today, I like to call it our 21st century horse, is also an incredible agent of healing. I worked at a little farm that helped children with all kinds of different challenges. And there was one little girl who was about 8 years old who was autistic. And I learned that some of the symptoms of autism are very uncomfortable being around people, very uncomfortable interacting, a lot of trouble speaking. Children with autism have difficulty recognizing facial expressions. They can look at you and they're not sure if you're angry or sad or happy. And it's a real struggle and it's very difficult. One of the things that I discovered was that if you have a child who has autism, you want desperately, if you're the parent, to help your child get better, quote unquote, to try to be happier, to try to fit in, to try to be able to enjoy things that kids who don't have autism enjoy. But that's kind of underlying that is a message to the child, which is, I would be happier if you were happier, and I think you would be happier if you were more like other children.
Mm.
And although there's loving truth on one level, there's also a message that says, I'm not really happy with the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
And children with autism get that. And it doesn't help. And what happens when this little girl got with this horse was, she had never been really with a horse before, and she looked at the horse and she put out her hand and the horse sniffed her hand, and then she just turned and walked away and the horse followed her. And then she stopped and she looked back at the horse, and the therapist said, I think that horse likes you. It's following you. And the little girl smiled. And her mother, who was watching, said, I've never seen her smile like that before. And then she went back to the horse and she petted it and she walked away and the horse followed her again. And she had this huge smile. And as time went on, she kept going for therapy with the horse. She started to be happier. She started to interact with the horse, and that led her to interact with the therapist. Then she started to interact with some of the other girls. And after a while, she totally had this transformation of self-confidence and self-acceptance that she had never had before. And in explaining why this happened in the book, what I try to help people understand is, for a horse to be interested in being with you, they have to feel safe. Remember, they want to feel that everything's okay in terms of the fact that they're a prey animal. The next thing is they want to feel comfortable physically and emotionally. They don't want to be stressed out. And then what comes after that is horses are naturally very curious. The opposite of fear in a horse is curiosity.
Hmm.
If a horse sees a plastic bag blowing across a corral, he'll spook at first and maybe run, but eventually he'll stop and he'll look back at that little plastic bag and he'll be very curious. And once he decides that he's safe, that it's not going to eat him, he'll probably walk up to the bag and smell it. He may put it in his mouth and chew on it. Horses want to know, is it taste good? Is it fun to play with? Because they're very playful and curious.
Mm-hmm.
And when this horse walked up to this little girl, the little girl gave off in her body language that she was totally vulnerable and totally available and that she was very curious. And then she just walked away and the horse went, wow, this is very nice. I'm curious in you. And when the horse interacted with the girl, you got a being who was saying to the little girl, I don't care that you have autism. I don't care that you're not like other little girls. I like you. I accept you. The horse didn't see a little girl with autism. The horse saw a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that little girl could feel that. And it felt great. So it is the ability of horses, when they interact with humans, to give unconditional acceptance, or if you wish, unconditional love to us, that is very powerful. Because horses, unlike humans, don't judge, they don't criticize, they don't have expectations, And they just accept you based on your behavior. If you have positive, loving behavior, they accept you. If you're unhappy, anxious, afraid, or something like that, they don't want to be around it. So they're very accepting. And sometimes that acceptance is some of the honest acceptance that somebody's never really had from their parents or another person before.
That's interesting. So what would you say about a horse that maybe doesn't interact with you in a positive way? You know, somebody who they might consider a problem horse, they can't get along with it. They're, you know, struggling. It's got a bad attitude, whatever. I mean, what's the breakdown that's going on in a situation like that?
Well, if you start from the basis that horses first want to be safe, they second they want to be comfortable, and thirdly they want to have a leader, that applies to whether a horse is with other horses or whether the horse is with you or a human. So once a horse knows it's safe, and most horses know after a while if they lived on your ranch or they've lived in your barn or facility, after a while they feel safe, they know there are no predators around, then they just want to be comfortable. They want to be able to relax, drink, eat, play with other horses if they're there. And then the third thing is, if there's another person, you know, if you have a horse in a herd of 50 horses, every horse knows their pecking order place. There's the alpha who leads the herd all the way down to number 49 who takes up the end of the herd and everyone in between. If you and your horse are in your corral, that's a herd of two. And you want your horse to look at you, but you don't want him to say, oh, good, here's number two. And what happens with a lot of people is the horses are comfortable, they're safe, but they don't look at you as the leader. And that means if there are only two in the herd and you're not the leader, they're the leader and all the decisions are going to be made by them. And so resistance is all based on disrespect that you're not my leader, because I'm not going to put my life in your decisions or your hands. Sometimes it could be fear. When something spooks a horse, instead of looking to you for confidence, the horse is going to say, I know what's best to do. You're out on a trail ride and there's a noise. And instead of having a relationship where the horse is expecting you to reassure him, you don't know that the horse is looking for that, and the horse just takes off. That's because he's decided he has to do what's best for him. I like to say that every time a horse says no, if it's not pain and it's not misunderstanding, it's usually fear or disrespect. So if a person has a problem horse, it's usually because, well, it's always because they don't look at the person as someone who is a good source of leadership, which will mean safety, and that anything that frightens them or any decision they have to make, they'll make. And very often it'll be the opposite of what you want, and that shows up as disrespect and resistance and a problem horse.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, you said something earlier that made me think about what I always like to say, which is, there tends to be this idea that horses are unpredictable. And I tend to really adamantly disagree with that, because I think horses are, if you know how to read a horse, they're very predictable. if you can really read them, they tell you what they're going to do next, but you have to be paying attention.
You're absolutely right, Alyssa. And one of my favorite expressions in learning about horses, I heard many years ago, is to say that horses are masters at knowing what happens before what happens happens.
Yeah, I would say that's very true.
And the moment you realize that there's a bunch of stuff that your horse is going to do before they buck, there's a bunch of things your horse is going to do before they take off with you on their back, there's a bunch of things that they will do before they rear, you become a master of knowing what happens before what happens. And that's how you get good with horses, reading horses, and that's how you stay safer. Absolutely.
Well, one thing I'm curious to ask you about that I know you wrote about in your book is some of the programs that we're seeing in prisons where inmates are actually training horses. And I'm especially curious about this because I have we have a family friend who actually runs the program in Carson City, or has in the past. So I'm curious about that and what you learned through your research about those programs.
The Wild Horse Inmate Program, which is now in about, I think, 7 or 8 prisons in the country, most of them are out west, started back in the 70s. When the BLM took over managing all the wild horses in this country, there were about 40 or 50,000 back then. I don't know how many there are today. They discovered that one of the best ways to manage them and keep the herds to a size that was containable was to give the horses up for adoption, let U.S. citizens adopt a horse. And for $125, anybody in this country can adopt a wild Mustang. The problem is that they were dangerous.
Mm.
So the next thing they said, well, we have to gentle these horses, but that costs too much money. We can't hire professional horse people. It's too expensive. And someone came up with a very interesting idea. He said, you know, we train inmates at prisons to make license plates. Why couldn't we send a horse trainer in and have them train him to gentle horses? And that's what they did back in the 80s. And I went out of to visit a huge prison in Colorado where they had the Wild Horse Inmate Program. And I was flabbergasted because I came to see how you could train someone who'd never been around a horse, much less a wild horse, become able enough to make a difference in gentling a horse. But what I found was something I never expected. Wild horses, and most people never come in contact with true wild horses, when they are confined, are extremely dangerous and can be extremely aggressive out of fear. And most people don't encounter a horse like that. And they've killed people. They can be so dangerous. And what happened to some of these inmates, a lot of them came from inner cities like Los Angeles and Chicago. Most of them had never seen a real horse. And they had come from gangs where the way they survived was being tough and using violence as a means to live and get by. And so they come in and they're put with a wild horse under the supervision of a trainer. And they think that they're going to use all their street smarts and macho toughness to overpower the horse. And very quickly, they realize they're no match. And as time went on and they started to learn how to gentle the horses, I was working with this one inmate and he said to me, you know, that horse is acting really tough and it looks like he wants to bite or kick. But you know what I think? I think he's terrified. And then all of a sudden he had this epiphany. He said, you know what? That's kind of like me. He said, my whole life, I've been a tough guy, and that's how I survived. But you know the truth? I was always afraid of everything, and I didn't want anybody to know that. And you know what? That horse is like me. He's acting real tough, but you know what? He's terrified too. And then the next thing that happened was the inmate realized that if the horse could change, maybe he could change.
Wow.
boy, say wow again. Oh, I get chills thinking about it. I went to this prison to see how inmates could gentle wild horses, and what I saw was horses gentling inmates.
That's pretty amazing.
It is, and it's still going on today, and it's a fabulous program. So few people know about it. All the things I've written about in my book about soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder, inmates, children with autism, children from alcoholic homes, addiction, all kinds of – so few people know about equine therapy. As a matter of fact, most people think when they hear equine therapy, it's all about horseback riding.
Mm-hmm.
All of these programs are interacting with a horse on the ground. That's how the relationship develops, not on their back. Because riding a horse is not natural for a horse. Otherwise, you'd see horses riding horses.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing to think that that program, which was created, you know, to sort of help with the overpopulation of wild horses, has had such a profound impact on the inmates that are training them. And, you know, maybe those guys are going to have a better chance when they get out.
Well, I can tell you they do. And with all the research I did for the book, the recidivism rate, that means the inmates who get out of prison but then go back, is enormous. It's like almost 75 to 80% of every man or woman who's an inmate who gets released ends up coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Two-thirds stay out forever if they've done the horse program.
Wow.
Huge amounts. It's life-changing.
It's almost the exact opposite.
Yeah, because it gives people something. You know what? This program gave an inmate who had never been with a horse a feeling and an awareness that he might never have had in his whole life. And it was compassion. For the first time in some of these guys' lives, they had compassion. Compassion is identifying with someone else and seeing the truth and feeling empathy for that horse or that person. These guys never had that before. And if they could have it for the horse, they could have it for themselves. And if they could have it for themselves, they could have it for others. And that's what builds character and builds confidence and self-esteem and allows someone to come back into the world and feel good about themselves and prosper.
Wow. Well, that is amazing. And I'm really excited to get more into your book. So I appreciate you coming on today. I think people are really going to enjoy this. I just have to ask you before we start wrapping up, how can our listeners find you online? What's the best way to learn more about you and your book?
Okay, there's two websites that I have. The book is called Riding Home, The Power of Horses to Heal. And all anyone has to do is go to ridinghome.com.
Okay, great.
And all the work that I do with people and horses and natural horsemanship all over the country is described on my website. My last name is Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S, and the website is hayesisforhorses.com.
Okay, well, I'll definitely link those up in the show notes. So whoever comes to the website to listen to the podcast episode at earnyourspurs.com will find those as well.
And I welcome anybody getting in touch with me for any questions or anything I can do to help them.
Awesome. Thank you. That's a great offer. So I have one final question for you before we wrap up. I always ask this question at the end of each interview. Based on your experience, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
You know, I have to say the most important part of a cowboy, and I guess we're talking about the relationship with a cowboy and his horse, the most important part of their work is how they and their horse get along to do their job. And so if you ask me to pick one word that was the most important, I'd have to say compassion. Because if the cowboy can look at everything they're doing from the horse's point of view, the horse will go to the ends of the earth for him, and they'll be the best partners they could want.
That's a perfect answer. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today, Tim. This has been really, really fascinating, and I'm so glad that we could make this happen.
Alyssa, I can't thank you enough. It was great for me. The time went by fast, and I'm always happy to come back again. And like I said, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, I want to help as many people as I can.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Bye now.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Tim Hayes. He has such an incredible story, and I was really excited to share it with you guys. If you'd like to check out more about Tim, you can find links to his website in the show notes for this episode at earnyourspurs.com/episode44. And also, you'll find a link to his book, Riding Home. That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to do something to help out the show, I would really appreciate it if you haven't done so. Just taking a moment to find the podcast in iTunes and leave us a review. It's really the best way to encourage iTunes to rank us higher so that more people can find it. I really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. Don't forget to get those bumpers into me. If you have any questions about that, feel free to email me through the website contact form or send me a message on Facebook or Twitter. And I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.